Winter is the time to sort possibilities for the next growing season. And a good place to start the sorting is at a farm conference. One such conference, EcoFarm, brings together like-minded farmers from around the world to talk about the possibilities of growing food ecologically. And they lead us to ask, can ecological farming feed a hungry world?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Hello out there. You are tuned into the 1088th edition of the Food Chain right here on the GCN Radio Network. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends down there in Pango who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio with engineer Jason Strube. Jason.
It's my pleasure to roll with.
Jason, do you think it possible to feed the world by growing food ecologically?
Well, I should surely hope so. I don't know.
But you don't know. Maybe we can find out today.
I hope so.
Producer Olivia Duncan, what do you think? You think it possible?
I think it has to be.
You think it has to be? Ooh, that's an imperative. Well, folks, for the farming community, winter is the time for sorting seeds, making plans, meeting new people, telling tall tales. And that is what farmers do when they attend one of the many farm conferences that take place around the world and around the U.S. of A. Each farm conference I have attended is made unique by its core mission and by the people attracted to that mission. One such conference, EcoFarm, brings together the like-minded farmers from around the world to the beaches of Pacific Grove, California, which, if you're a farmer, not a bad place to be in the winter. And what they do, of course, is they talk about the possibilities of farming ecologically. EcoFarm is now conducting its 37th year of conferencing, and the gathering can, with good cause, lay claim to being one of the originators of what came to be known as organic farming. But the birthing of organic farming took place years ago in the multi-billion dollar industry it spawned is now in the mainstream of food and agriculture, leaving the metro farmers at EcoFarm behind to tend their farms, which is what they're doing. That so many remain true to the vision of ecological agriculture around the nation, around the world, leads us to ask, can ecological farming grow enough food to feed the world's hungry? Well, here to help us out, we have some of the veterans of the ecological farming movement and EcoFarming Association. We have Thomas Whitman and we have Sam Earnshaw both. Thomas, start with you. You being in the studio, welcome aboard. Welcome back.
Well, thank you. Good morning, Michael and everybody out there. It's really a privilege to be on your show. Once more,
yeah. We've done a few shows. Thomas has taken the skills, I guess the intellectual skills that he picked up with the EcoFarm movement and developed a business out of it with toxic-free pest controls.
That's right.
Yeah.
For pest animals, mostly.
Mm-hmm. And unlike people, right?
No, I try not to
get involved
people.
In that one. Good. And also with us, Sam Earnshaw. Sam, are you there?
I am. Good morning, Michael and Thomas.
Good to have you aboard. Now, both of you have been part of the EcoFarm movement pretty near as long as I can remember. And I started going to EcoFarm, I don't know, a long time ago when it was in the hills above San Francisco, La Honda, which was a long, long time ago, and it was a very rudimentary enterprise at the time, which is to say I can remember sitting around eating organic beans and sprouts, and the whole scene became reminiscent of that scene in Blazing Saddles, you know, that
oh, yeah.
scene. Other than that, the EcoFarm movement and the conference and the association has grown over the years and really can lay claim to being one of the foundation movements of sustainable or alternative, organic, or the alternative way of growing crops other than the industrial way. Is that a fair thing to say, Thomas?
You know, that's a good way to describe it, Michael, because as you said in the introduction, that we're an ecological farming association, which doesn't necessarily imply that we have only one focus. I mean, organic is a big focus, but we're really open to working with any farmer in any state or place, and we just want to see farmers understand the principles of farming in a way that works with the basic ecology of the soil and land. That would be a good definition of ecological farming.
Okay. So I'm going to challenge both of you. Sam, we have a intern producer from the University of California with us today, Olivia. And Olivia is an environmental studies student, or that's her major. So she has some awareness of what we're talking about. But I'm going to challenge the both of you to tell Olivia what you believe ecological farming is and how it differs from other forms of farming. Sam?
Okie dokie. Well, the word ecology actually comes from the Greek word oikos, for house or household. And ecology is the study of the ways organisms interact with their environment. And so the word ecology was coined in the 1800s. Ecological farming includes all methods, like including organic, which regenerate ecosystem services like prevention of soil erosion, water infiltration, biodiversity with habitat, carbon sequestration. So many techniques are used, whereas organic farming actually has a legal definition. It's an ecological production system that promotes and enhances biodiversity based on minimal use of off-farm and synthetic inputs, and has management practices that restore and maintain. So the words sustainable, natural, and ecological have no legal basis or legal definition for their use, whereas organic has a very specific regulated use for use definition for use on products. So is that a good beginning, the difference between ecological and organic?
Yes, definitely, I agree.
Well, Thomas has in hand an official definition, though not a legal one, for what we're talking about, for ecological farming. What is that official definition, Thomas?
Well, instead of a definition, I think I'm going to, excuse me, actually read you the mission of our organization, Olivia.
Mm-hmm.
And the mission of the Ecological Farming Association is to nurture healthy, just, and ecological sustainable farms, food systems, and communities by bringing people together for education, alliance building, that is alliance building, advocacy, and celebration. So it's more of a holistic approach to farming. It's more not just about the soil and not just about the plants. It's about the whole system, including the economic system and the community system.
And people, too, right?
Well, that's what I mean by community.
Yeah. Good. Okay, so there it is. Now, before we take a quick break, I'd like to ask each of you one of your favorite memories of EcoFarm Conference. Thomas?
Oh, I guess one of my fondest memories is this year we have a very famous mycologist as our closing speaker, Paul Stamets. And last time he spoke, he was talking about this web of this giant mushroom called the mycelium, which actually can be miles in size underneath the soil, and how it's like a web. And he had people stationed all around the giant Asilomar Merrill Hall with big balls of yarn. And while he was talking, he said, start throwing, and people threw the balls of yarn all over the audience, and including up in the balcony. And in the end, there was this giant web throughout everybody.
And that's the life of the mycelium.
Yeah.
And, you know, when we had Paul on the food chain, he talked about how mycelium can be used to restore ecological disasters like oil spills and whatnot. Amazing stuff. Sam, what is your favorite memory?
Oh, I remember that one, too. That was a good one. And he's going to be there this year. So if anybody wants to go down for the day uses, that he's going to be there on, is it Saturday, Thomas?
Do you yes, he's closing the conference on Saturday.
But anyhow, my favorite memory is the very first time I went to EcoFarm, which was with my wife, Joanne, and we were just getting into farming, and we were working on a conventional farm, and we heard about organic farming, and we went to the La Honda conference in 1983, and I remember sitting in this room, and I looked around, I was surrounded by all these people, that not I didn't know a single person there, and kind of tears came to my eyes because I felt like I found my tribe, I found my people. And I've had other people tell me they've had the same experience, and I've been with that tribe for the whole rest of my life. So I feel that's the memory I'll never forget, is that first time I went.
I think I must have met you there. Folks, this is The Food Chain, and we will be right back.
Wow, MetroFarm.com says we can earn a 5-, 6-, or 7-figure income by farming a small parcel of land in or near the city.
And we don't even have to own the land. We can lease it year to year.
MetroFarm.com says we can grow fruit on prairie bench lands, houseplants in coastal valleys, vegetables in city greenbelts, and ornamentals in neighborhoods of fancy homes.
We can even grow flowers on our wooded hillside.
Get all the information you need to grow for profit at MetroFarm.com, including the complete guide to earning 5-, 6-, and 7-figure incomes by farming small parcels of land. Meet the farmers who earn the money. Find experts at MetroFarm.com who will examine your property and assess which crops to grow. Meet consultants who will help steer your project to profitability. And get the latest news about the business of growing high-value specialty crops for the city at MetroFarm.com.
We've always dreamed about farming a small parcel of land. At MetroFarm.com, we can get all the help we need to stop dreaming and start growing.
Welcome back, folks. Hey, it's winter. And what do farmers do? And you know, farmers work all in the field all year long, except for the winter. When the weather's too bad to be out in the fields or to be doing too much productive out there at any rate. So great time to get together, to meet other people, to swap ideas, to think about the possibilities for the new year, to learn what's going on that's new and productive, and to dance, you know, to be human again, to socialize. So, and that's exactly what farmers do at farm conferences all over the world. I've had the opportunity to speak at a good number of them, and each farm conference takes on its own character by the mission that it expresses, as Thomas has expressed the mission of EcoFarm, and also the people to whom that mission, you know, has meaning and gravity and pulls them together. So EcoFarm has always been one of my favorites because maybe it's because it's kind of like around my hometown here, but it's always fun and always interesting. Tell us a little bit about the importance you see in farmers getting together, you know, at least once a year to, you know, to talk about the possibilities of the future. Let's start with you, Sam.
Well, people look at it as a recharge of their batteries. I remember when we were farming, I'm no longer farming, that farming is a very difficult way of life. And it's sometimes it's lonely and it's physically and mentally stressing. And just to get away and be around a lot of other people who share it is very uplifting. And I remember leaving EcoFarm thinking, I was going back into this other world where EcoFarm is its own little inspirational and recharge world. So that's the way I think of it, and I think a lot of other people do as well.
Thomas?
Well, yeah, I completely agree with Sam. It's actually, for a lot of us, it's the one time a year we get to see at EcoFarm. And all walks of farmers, the smallest and the largest, are there. And it's just a magical happening. And it's not just farmers. There's also the whole produce delivery and produce houses. And
the food chain.
The whole food chain is all there. And there are a lot of, in fact, a lot of times it seems more important to skip a workshop or two and just hang out with people and catch up.
So how do you feed your attendees? And not just the food that you feed them, but what do you feed them so that they can, you know, the spiritual and personal and technological things that you feed them that keep them coming back year after year after year? What's the secret? I mean, it's not like a rock concert or something, but it is.
The secret sauce.
The secret sauce, yeah.
Well, we try to keep really abreast with issues, especially, you know, whether it's regulatory or actually in ways to grow. We need to be on the cutting edge every year. And when we design the conference, and right now we have 45 people that put together the conference every year in a conference committee. And every year we come up with sometimes as many as 300 to 400 ideas of workshops.
Wow.
And out of those 300 or 400 ideas, we sit down with 45 people and by raising our hands on what we think is important, we come down to the top 50 workshops.
So there's workshops. What else you do? Sam, what do you do?
Well, there's plenaries. There's the...
Which is a plenary? What's a plenary?
Plenary is just like a keynote speech where we invite some big, well, good speakers to get up there and talk to the whole group at once. There's pre-conference events, and one of them is the bus tour, which is actually, I think it's full this year, but if you want to sign up for next year. But this year it's going to the Monterey Regional Waste Management District to start off with, where they're taking ag waste and kitchen waste and making, they're generating electricity. They've got this state-of-the-art system from Germany that they're making methane. It's an amazing thing. And then we're going to ALBA, which is the Agricultural Land-Based Association site in Salinas, where farmers mm-hmm. and farm workers are trained to become their own farms.
So it sounds like your cup runneth over. But there's one thing I really wanted to touch on with respect to something that really exemplifies ecological farming and EcoFarm Conference, and that's Joanne's workshop. Would you tell us about Joanne's workshop?
Well, she's got many, but one of the ones I think you're referring to is the Insights from Farmers, where she has, every year she's had three farmers come and just tell their story.
You know, what I was looking for was the cover crop story.
The wildlands. The what?
The farming with wildlands.
The farming with wildlands,
wherein you bring nature back into the growing system.
Well, yes, there's a biodiversity workshop where she talks about the different ways that nature and the wild is incorporated into farming, in the sense that habitat isn't destroyed, that wetlands and hedgerows and grass waterways and beneficial insects and birds are all kind of integrated into farming. A lot of times you look at these farms, there's nothing on the borders, there's nothing inside, and there's no place for wildlife. So Wild Farm Alliance is all about integrating nature and into farming, and it can be equally productive. It's not that it takes away from yields.
I guess
that's what you're getting at?
Yeah, that's exactly what I was getting at, because it seems like much of agriculture is, by virtue of food safety laws and whatnot, are going to this model where they're stripping nature out of agriculture completely, almost. It's
well,
like you said, it's almost frightening to see a farm now, because there's no life there other than the crops.
There's been a lot of scientific research and papers recently, especially after this food safety has erupted as an issue, that shows that these habitat plantings actually reduce the pathogens that come onto a farm. So it's, you know, the more diverse and biodiverse a system is, the healthier it is. So that is counter. And actually the federal, the Food Safety Marketing Act, or what's it called?
Food Safety Marketing Agreement, I think. FSMA.
Yeah. Specifically says that farmers should not be reducing habitat. So it's, you know, they know that's an issue, that farmers are doing that. But it's the buyers and the auditors who actually aren't that educated about.
They want to be guaranteed their food safety.
Yeah, they come
and
there.
They're afraid of anything that is living. But I guess with Sam, what really struck me is that very notion is really the definition of what ecological farming is, because you seek to farm with nature as opposed to against it.
Exactly.
Now, even on the other side of that issue can be organic farmers who can be farming on that lands without any life left on them. That can still be organic.
Well, actually, Michael, it's a requirement of organic that they maintain soil, water, woodlands, and wetlands, and habitat. It's actually in the law that they have to require, that they have to, they have to have biodiversity. So certifiers are starting to really go and make sure.
So that's a conflict within the organic community then, right?
Well, it's not a conflict. It's like something they have to start. They have, a lot of them have been doing it, but it can be done with, like, strips of beneficial insect habitat. It can be done with hedgerows. It can be done with grass waterways. It can be done with oak trees. Oak trees are phenomenal habitat for birds and insects. So.
Okay, so there it is. That is, but it is a great way of looking at what ecological farming is, at least in my mind, that you bring nature back in and that you work with nature as opposed to against it. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, your host for this hour. We're talking about ecological farming and EcoFarm. And you, do you think ecological farming can feed the hungry of the world? 831-479-1080. Michael Olson, Sam Earnshaw, Thomas Whitman, Olivia Duncan, and you. Do stay tuned. Welcome back. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio. And What's Eating What today is ecological farming. And what position this way of farming holds in our world of food production here in the United States. With us today to help us define that role and the possibilities that can be generated from that role, we have Thomas Whitman and Sam Earnshaw, both veterans of the Ecological Farming Association and the EcoFarm Conference. Been doing it a long time. I'd like to talk a little bit about the evolution of the EcoFarm movement. You've been in business like 37 years, starting up in the hills of La Honda, now at Pacific Grove, people coming from all over the world to learn about ecological farming. What exactly is your niche? I know there's other conferences that are ecological agriculture oriented. I think specifically of Acres USA. But when you go to an Acres USA conference, it's different. It's entirely different than an EcoFarm conference. So what exactly is your niche? We'll start with you, Thomas.
I would say the niche of EcoFarm is probably a big part is community building with getting the latest up-to-date, sharper edge tools that you need to be successful, as well as more understanding of the regulatory world that's happening around farming. But one of the big niches is the site alone, which is actually a state park called Asilomar. And all the buildings there, the older buildings, are just beautiful. They're architectural marvels that were designed by a woman, Julia...
Morgan?
Julia Morgan. Thank you, Sam.
She's the same gal that designed her Sam Simeon, wasn't she?
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the site itself, and it's right on the beach, is just a vacation in itself for farmers and quite a great venue for just communicating with other people.
Good. That's pretty cool. Sam, what makes EcoFarm different than other farm conferences around the country, other than the fact you get to have lunch with deer on the beach?
Well, I think Thomas pretty much said it. The site is just remarkable, and it just... very spiritual. The buildings are beautiful, and yeah, it's just a very different. We've been to other farm conferences that are in just kind of standard hotels, and I think the site really speaks for it. And then, of course, there's the content and the people we know and the spirit and the and all that. But, yeah, the site really is the top seller, I think, to me.
Well, good. And we're going to break to a question from Olivia, who had a question for Thomas and Sam. Go ahead, Olivia.
Yeah, I was wondering how GMOs fit into the picture of ecological farming. There's a lot of stigmatization about it, a lot of concern, but at the same time, there can be benefits if you utilize them strategically. So I was curious about what your organization views on that.
Oh, there's good and there's bad.
Well, actually, we have a statement somewhere on our website about GMOs, and we are not in favor of them at all, because when a crop is modified genetically, it's actually a unique new thing on the earth, and we don't have any idea what's going to happen with that. There are all kinds of ideas about how you can integrate GMOs into an organic system, but right now, and I hope forever, the organic certifiers continue to not allow GMOs. Because when you're shopping, a lot of people don't want to eat GMOs, and they want to know if they're not eating them. And one way is to buy organic food, which prohibits the use of genetic engineering. So my opinion is I think it needs a lot more study before we can go forward with it. And I think a lot of things have been approved without enough study. In fact, the studies that have been done by folks like Monsanto, who it is in their best benefit to say everything is cool. And the FDA seems to go along with it, although much of the FDA is a conglomeration of people who came from the industry itself, including Monsanto.
Monsanto spends a lot of money to prove its point.
That's right.
That's right. Sam, I have another question with respect to technology and organic farming, and that would be hydroponics, because I believe that the hydroponic industry is fighting for official organic recognition. But what of course that means is that you can grow food without soil. So how do you folks in the organic community look at hydroponics?
Well, that's a really good question, Michael, because it's really a very current question. It's being discussed at the NOSB, and there's a lot of both sides on it. But the definition of organic farming is, the definition says that food has to be grown in soil. And so right now, most of the people in the organic industry are lining up against hydroponics. And I've heard people say the food doesn't even taste as good when it's grown that way. But that's what the definition says. It's supposed to be grown in soil. So until they change the definition of organics, it really doesn't have a place. And there's some big players who really want to see hydroponics in organics. So, but they should just sell it as hydroponic. They don't need to label it organic. But nevertheless, there's something really, it's a very, very hot issue, and I think there's going to be, if there's a workshop, they're not the kind of workshop we put together on it, but there's something on it at the conference.
Okay, you brought up something that is really key to this whole issue, and that's NOSB. What the heck is that?
It's the National Organic Standards Board, and it's, I don't know, Thomas, do you know more about it than I do? It's a group of people across the industry. It has farmers and retailers and environmental representatives that review issues in or the organic movement, such as hydroponics, and such as like carrageenan is this seaweed that's used in practically every soy milk product that you have, and they've just outlawed that because it's shown to be not good in quantities for you, and it's decimating certain areas of the world where they're taking all the seaweed. But and then they make a recommendation that goes to this federal organization called the National Organic Program, NOP, and that's when you buy anything organic right now, you'll see that little green circle down the corner that says USDA Organic, which is a great certification symbol, but it starts with the NOSB and goes to the NOP, and then that's, so does that answer the question?
Yeah, one other thing I might add, Sam, and you really covered that well, is that the NOSB is the regulatory body that sets the standards for organic.
That's right. And that's where I would like to pick up when we come back from this break, because if anybody has a hand in shaping the organic industry, it would be the NOSB, because they're the ones that say what you can and cannot use for organic agriculture. And they have really changed a lot of what you can and cannot do in organic agriculture. And how does what they have done relate to how organic agriculture was thought to be when it was first brought to the table so long ago by people like those of EcoFarm? This is the Food Chain, 831-479-1080. Can ecological agriculture feed the hungry? Welcome back. We are back, and we are talking ecological agriculture. We're honing in a little bit here, folks, on the difference between the original vision of what organic farming would be, held by those small farmers who had a way of doing things that was different than the industrial model. They're focused on their soil. They're focused on their environment. They're focused on really almost hand-grown foods, and selling those foods to people who really appreciated them. And then someplace along the line, somebody got an idea to, hey, let's take this word organic and make it official so nobody can cheat. And so they gave the word to the federal government, and the federal government took the word and made an official word out of it, built a law around it, a fence, as it were, so that people couldn't get in that didn't pay the price of complying with the rules. And those rules were governed by government organizations, National Organic Standards Board, which would recommend what you can and cannot do, or the materials you can and cannot use, and they would send those recommendations up to the National Organic Program, where they would become policy, and that was that. Now, all of a sudden, with that word becoming official, organic agriculture blossomed, exploded, and it's become a multi-billion dollar a year industry, leaving many of those small family farmers practicing ecological agriculture behind. Now, I look at the National Organic Standards Board and think that must be a board that is under severe pressure by lots of different people to bend the rules, to make it easier for them to grow crops and make it harder for their competition to grow crops. Sam?
Well, I hear what you're saying. It's like the golden rule, who has the gold rules, and it's like, yes, there's always pressure, but I just don't know enough about what you're saying to say this is what happens. I know that there's changes in the, you know, in the composition of the NOSB, and there's, like I say, the carrageenan is a really good issue. Another was the use of antibiotics in growing apples. They used antibiotics to stop, I think it was scab on the blossoms, and there was a lot of the apple growers didn't want to do that. And anyhow, there's these issues that come up. But organic farming, you know, started way back in the 1800s.
Sure.
And, you know, Albert Howard is mm-hmm. known in the early 1900s, and Rudolf Steiner. So there's been a progression. And yes, the NOSB is just kind of another step along in this. And yes, just as with any kind of bureaucratic human endeavor, you're going to get these pressures from people who think that they, you know, who want to continue making money, I guess, off of certain practices. So, and there's a lot of work. The NOSB members are tired. They're on for 5 years. I don't think they're paid except for their travel, and they have to put a ton of work in to stay current with this stuff. But Thomas might have something to say about that.
Thomas?
Oh, thank you, Sam. Yes, I think the NOSB like you say, the people that are on that board work really hard to try to figure out what is going to be a do-no-harm situation.
And they don't get paid?
They don't get paid. And it's very complex. And often, sometimes they'll make a ruling that doesn't seem to make sense to small growers, but makes sense to larger growers. I mean, it's hard because the board is composed of all sorts of people in the industry, from small farmers to some very large farmers, and to people that own large companies that produce organic stuff. So, yes, it is a regulatory board that people, you know, give their lives to help keep our standards safe for people, and especially with the burgeoning food safety oversight now, things are getting even more and more tight. But you know, I think without a board like that, we couldn't maintain a world that is organic.
Well, let me ask you this. I go to the farmer's market here, there, or everywhere. A lot of small farmers have given up on being organic. That's not to say they've given up on organic farming or producing organic produce or not being organic or using chemicals. No, they're still organic farmers. It's just that they've given up on the whole rigmarole of what it takes to be organic because of all of these rules and regulations. So I'd like to ask both of you, have you ever run across farmers who say, darn, we shouldn't have given that name to the government to mess with?
You know,
what you mean is certified organic.
Yes, certified organic, yes.
Well, you know, my feeling is that in the last probably 10 years, with the advent of CSAs,
you got to hold the comment because we're going to have to
try to hold it, Michael.
Sam, that same question's coming your way, so get ready. Do you think small family farmers ever regret giving their word organic to the federal government? Because what happened when they did is the organic industry grew into a giant multi-billion-dollar-a-year industry, leaving them behind. This is the Food Chain, Michael Olson. I am at 831-476-831-479-1080, and you can call 831-479-1080. What do you think? Do you think ecological agriculture can feed the hungry of the world? 831-479-1080. Right back. Well, got a few minutes left. So much to talk about. The big question, though, the real significant one, is do small farmers feel regret for having given their word organic up to the federal government, which turned it into a giant industry, thus leaving them behind? Thomas Whitman.
Well, I think, especially with the advent of subscription farming, where, you know, farmers sell direct to their customers via a box every week, and also the farmers market movement, which is incredibly bloomed. People are getting to know the farmer.
And even restaurants.
And restaurants, too, using organic food.
Yeah.
People and restaurants even put the farmer's name on the food. People are gaining this level of trust of farmers that's beyond the word organic. It's like they're welcome to go on a farm and check it out themselves. And as far as being organic, if you're a small farmer and you have a group of people that trust you and come to your farm or come to your farmer's market stand and ask you questions, it's become, in the small farmer world, more of a trust-based situation. That's how I think. I don't think they're regretting the lack of certified unless they're selling on the wholesale market.
There you go, Sam.
Well, you know, I remember when we were early on in the organic, it's human nature. You know, some people were actually, we sold next to a guy at Farmer's Market who we knew was not organic, and he put this little cardboard thing out in front of his stuff saying organic. So it was like people who were violating this who really brought the pressure onto the government. It started with the California Organic Act in 1991, and then it did go on to the feds. And so, like, who loves the government? You know, we love it when they're good, and we don't love it when they over-regulate us. But it was, you know, there were stories back in the 80s about carrots, you know, a big scandal where conventional carrots, they just put an organic label on the box. So that's what drove it to go to the government. And whether we like it or not, at least it's certified means that somebody has actually certified that this is organic. So it's a valuable label, but everything comes with a cost. You know, there's nothing's free in this world, and that's one of the things to rely on buying certified organic, then you have to rely on this process that's going on.
You know, Thomas talked about how local agriculture is made up of essentially going out to the farmer and looking in the shed, seeing if there's any pesticides. With certified organic, you don't do that. You rely on somebody else to do that, right?
That's correct.
And there it is. Well, I'm going to ask both of you, can ecological farming feed the hungry of the world, Thomas?
Well, I think definitely yes. I mean, one thing that I came to thinking about this question the last couple of days is that the world is a big place, and the United States is a producer with mega farms. And I think I was in the Peace Corps for 6 years, and I've seen a lot of the world. And what I've seen is that most of the rest of the world is not a mega farm place like the U.S. Most of it is small farms that are
very diverse. Ecological, right?
They are ecological, and they feed the local people. It's all local.
Sam, really quickly, can we do it?
Yeah, the gap, you know, yields isn't the only thing, but some organic farms nearly yield or out yield things. Small farms have been shown to be very productive and more productive than large farms. And so there's all kinds of nuances to this, but I believe the answer is yes, but it does take attention.
There you go, folks. Sam Earnshaw, Thomas Whitman.
Oh, one last thing,
ecological farming.
eco-farm.org.
There you go.
There's still
and you
room
can go
at the conference.
Get a day rate. You can
there you go. Out of time. Thanks all. Bye bye.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live. KSCO, Santa Cruz.
CBS News, I'm Steve Dorsey. More people have shown up to protest Donald Trump today than those who came out to his inauguration yesterday. Estimates say 500,000 people have gathered on the National Mall for the Women's March. D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser.
Immigration rights, for reproductive rights, for LGBTQ rights. We have to stand up to fight climate change.
Keep heading down this way. The crowd at Independence is already way past 4th Street. So come on down this way. Keep on walking down the road.
The crowd grew by the thousands. They began arriving, many cheerfully waving signs, but quickly they grew so large, organizers were sending them on detours. At the rally itself, thousands couldn't see what was going on or hear the speakers, but they wandered around photographing each other's protest signs.
Correspondent Cammie McCormick. President Trump's newly sworn-in defense secretary, James Mattis, has arrived at the Pentagon. He was greeted by chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Joe Dunford. Mr. Trump attended a prayer service this morning. He's set to visit the CIA later. Correspondent Kenneth Craig reports on Mr. Trump's first actions as president yesterday.
After bidding farewell to the Obamas and holding a shortened parade, Mr. Trump wasted no time in his quest to repeal Obamacare. He signed an executive order instructing federal agencies to minimize the financial burden of the law by possibly eliminating the penalty for not having health insurance.
Accused Army trader Bo Bergdahl speaking out. More from correspondent Jim Krasula.